It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. A great weekend. Oh my goodness, are you kidding me? As the Pirates win a big one, 73-71 over Cincinnati, the Bearcats on Saturday afternoon. And what a great day. I'm Dave Richmond, and we'll have the guys in just a little bit to give their perspectives on things for the big game. But what an outstanding atmosphere. Over 4,200 people saw the game, including my son Alexander, my daughter Mackenzie, my friend Brian. We were all there in our seats. And then, of course, a lot of people took advantage of that lower bowl, $5 tickets. The students' tickets were sold, and what a great atmosphere for the Pirates. We'll look at this game, and obviously we have the post-game comments from K.J. Davis and also from Jaden Gardner, Coach Dooley, much more. But let's go now to what did you think, Kyle?
Well, a huge win yesterday for Pirate basketball as East Carolina takes out Cincinnati. I really didn't see that one coming. I don't know how many people in Pirate Nation did, but it was great to get a big-time win over the defending conference champion Cincinnati Bearcats, a team that was 12-2 and knocking on the doors of the top 25 going into the game with the Pirates. So it was really good to see the guys come out and play with some confidence, you know, limit turnovers, make a lot of threes. And sometimes that's just, you know, kind of what happens. The ball goes in the basket, and some games it doesn't. And the ball was going in the basket yesterday or Saturday for East Carolina against Cincinnati. Those three-point shots were huge. And from the other side, you know, Cincinnati wasn't making a lot of outside shots. So huge day yesterday for K.J. Davis, kind of leading the way. Seth Ledet played well. Sean Williams, Jaden Gardner played well. I mean, all the usual suspects, so to speak. And it was huge for Joe Dooley in his first year, in his second conference game, to get a win like that over Cincy, particularly after the performance against SMU. It was much needed. We played really well at home. The only two home losses we have was a buzzer beater loss to James Madison, and then a close loss to High Point. So besides that, you know, we've won all of our home games and won an 0-8 conference at home. We go on the road now against Memphis for the next conference game. I think it's Thursday night, I believe, we play Memphis. So we, you know, got to get better on the road, but we're playing great at home. Huge win over Cincy, and it was great to see the guys celebrate with Coach Dooley in the locker room with the little pouring the water over his head and just seeing him jump around and having a big time. That was cool to see, the excitement, and pretty good crowd, man. The students weren't there, and we had a pretty good turnout from the fans Saturday. So it was good to see Minji's rocking like that. It was good to see a huge win kind of beckons back to the days of Bill Harrion and some of the wins over Marquette and games like that, some of the upsets we pulled off in the original Conference USA back in the day. So Joe Dooley making his mark in year one. Hopefully we'll see some more of these wins before the year's over that you don't expect. I mean, if we can beat Cincinnati at home, theoretically, we can beat anybody when they come into Minji's Coliseum. And Cincinnati's one of the best teams in our league, and you know, we need to see some improvement on the road. But it looks like in Minji's this year, we're going to be a force to be reckoned with, and somebody not to be taken lightly at home. So go Pirates, and now we'll see what Bubba thinks of the game.
Yeah, guys, what a huge, huge win for ECU basketball, one of our biggest in a long time yesterday. So big for first-year head coach Joe Dooley. Obviously, he's laying the foundation on which this program is going to be built. Much of that has been done in the offseason, but then just to have a cornerstone victory like this, a team that won the league last year in Cincinnati, a team that has dominated this series down through the years, 12-1 prior to yesterday. So the Bearcats coming in on the verge of the top 25, ranked 28th and 31st, if you will, based on the number of votes they were receiving in the coaches and AP polls. And, of course, we were coming off a 28-point loss on Wednesday night out at SMU. And then you have Cincinnati, like I said, that's nearly ranked 12-2, Their only two losses came against 12-1 teams in Ohio State to open the year, and then also down at Mississippi State. So you had the Bearcats, 17.5 point favorites, and then they jump out to a 9-0 lead just a little over 4 minutes into the game. But we don't panic, and Coach Dooley calls a timeout, challenges our guys, and they respond. And boy, did they respond. They outscored the Bearcats 36-18 from that point on and take a 36-27 lead into the break after leading by as many as 11. And the thing that made it so impressive, guys, is you had Jaden Gardner, who's, of course, our leading scorer in 19 points per game. He didn't even score in the first half. He had 9 or 10 rebounds and was certainly a presence in that regard. But he did not scratch. And with our lack of offensive firepower, especially in recent games, that's something that was very impressive. And why was that the case? K.J. Davis. K.J. Davis had the 8-point flurry there after we fell behind 9-0. He scored those points very quickly. And when he did, he got the crowd back into it in addition to just getting us back into the game. So that was absolutely huge. And then you had, of course, the contributions of Sean Williams, who finished with 16 points and knocked down, I guess it was 4 threes. You had Seth Lede scoring double figures. I believe he finished with 11-6 or 11-7. And then you had also the performance of Jaden Gardner, who put in 13 points in the second half. And then the second half began much like the first half did, in that Cincinnati, down 9 at the break, they responded as you knew they would, had a 12-2 run to start the second half, took a 1-point lead, but again, we didn't panic. We had a seesaw game from that point on, and then I think we built a lead there toward the end of the ball game, but we're unable to hold it. We got the 5-second call. We didn't hang our heads, though. And Justice Obasohan, he had a tremendous block shot, and he played 20 minutes in the game. That's something that a lot of people may have overlooked as well, and I think Coach Dooley called attention to that in his post-game remarks, which we're going to hear on this show. But Coach Dooley gave a lot of credit to Justice. Yeah, he only had 3 points and 1 rebound, but he played much bigger than those numbers would lead you to believe in his 20 minutes. So just an absolutely huge win for our program, is something that we can really build upon. Hopefully we'll do so. You have several huge recruits there yesterday. 7-footer Charles Coleman was in the house, as well as many other local products. So that made an awfully positive impression on those guys and pointed to where this program's headed under the direction of Joe Dooley's regime. So the next time out, we're going to be traveling to Memphis on Thursday night. Of course, first-year head coach Penny Hardaway will be taking on the Tigers at the FedEx Forum, 9 p.m. on ESPNU. Memphis is coming in extremely hot. They're coming off an 85-74 victory over Wichita State, their fourth consecutive win and sixth in their last seven. And they're an awfully high-scoring team, as they have scored 85 points or more in their last seven games. And in five of those games, they scored 92 points or more. So we're going to have ECU, that's averaging right around 70 points a game, going up against the high-flying, high-scoring, extremely athletic Memphis Tigers and first-year head coach Penny Hardaway. I think it's a game, obviously, you have very contrasting styles. And if ECU is going to pull the huge road upset, get their first road victory of the season, as we are now 0-4, then it's one that we're going to definitely have to control the tempo in. And it's going to have to be a game that's going to be played in the probably upper 60s or low to mid 70s at the most if we're going to have a chance to come out on top. But I'm awfully excited about the victory and just so excited about where this program is headed under Joe Dooley and this coaching staff. And Dave, something else I forgot to mention that I wanted to add is yesterday afternoon, how cool was it to see national basketball analysts like Dick Vitale, Jeff Goodman, Andy Katz, etc., tweeting about ECU basketball? That's something that you very rarely, if ever, see. And you saw it back in the spring when we hired Joe Dooley, because it was such a huge hire from our program, bringing Dooley back. But very rarely do you see the likes of Dick Vitale, Jeff Goodman, Andy Katz, and so forth tweeting about East Carolina basketball. So that was awesome to see, and that's something that can definitely not be underestimated, the amount of exposure we got and the amount of mileage that we got and can get from that win that we had yesterday over a program like Cincinnati. And Dave, something else I need to add, a correction I need to make, rather, is that Memphis will actually be coming in after a loss. They had their four-game win streak snapped today as they fell 90-77 to the 19th-ranked Houston Cougars. Kelvin Sampson and his club just keep rolling and are now 15-0.
And now let's go to the post-game. In fact, the press conference, we were able to catch up. A lot of times we'd love to be there every single game. We can't, but this particular game we were. And let's now go to two great players for the game, Jaden Gardner and KJ Davis for the Pirates. And let's get their thoughts on the game now.
What's the biggest difference for you out there to go off like you did today?
Just working hard every day and knowing that my time was going to come eventually. I knew this was going to be a big game, so going into it, I was focused. I've been working hard, so.
They got off to, I believe, a 9-0 start, and you came in the game, hit a couple of threes, and got this thing started. Was it a mindset coming off the bench that you needed to come in and make a difference and maybe try to change things around and change the momentum?
Yeah. I saw we were getting down. I just wanted to provide, like, a spark coming off the bench, both defensively and offensively. I knew we needed the energy, so, yeah.
Jake, what was the happy function? The coach had a different feel to it, obviously, conference game and traveling.
yeah, this one was big. We just had a really bad loss to SMU. Kind of similar situation. We played a really good first half, and the second half we came out flat, but this time we learned from it, and I think we played a complete game, and coach really prepared us for Cincinnati well. And then we had guys like KJ come off the bench, spark us. Isaac hit some big threes. Sean hit, was tremendous all game. Seth was big. It was just a really good game out there tonight.
Jaden, you got off to a slow start and got things going in the second half. Talk about your second half and what you kind of did to adjust from the first half a little bit.
I just had to let the game come to me in the second half. They run a really good zone, confusing defense, so it's kind of hard to get the ball to the post sometimes. So I just had to stay patient, and my time came, and I had a little run there with scoring, but I had to be aggressive, keep rebounding, and play a lot of defense tonight.
Big picture. What kind of messages this win over Cincinnati sent to the rest of the conference about ECU basketball?
It's a new era. It's the Dooley era. And we came, we practiced so hard. We worked so hard for this. So why not reward ourselves with wins?
From a team standpoint, that's pretty obvious. But what did you learn from a game like this, playing against competition like this and in an environment like this?
You learn a lot. I thrive in situations like this. I love playing against the best competition. It was nice to be able to play against taller players, stronger players, different field, different game plans. It's just exciting to play the game of basketball.
Can you describe that shooter's mentality, hot hand feeling when you're just making basically everything you touch, that mental mindset for you, and you obviously experienced that today?
Yeah, just, you know, whether you make it or miss, you got to shoot the next shot the same way. Go back to the fundamentals every time. And just, if you do miss, just, you know, go to the next shot. We just go to the next shot.
KJ, as a guy who was here last year, what does a win like this mean to you, and what does it show the growth from last year to this year?
That's exact growth. You know, last year we would have never thought we would have come back a year later and beat Cincinnati, but, you know, just with hard work and growth, like you said.
You've had two games back-to-back where the lower bowl has been really packed. And it's been mostly the public because the students haven't been here. What do you say to your fellow students coming back from break as we go into conference season with these home games to get that lower bowl really going?
Just keep coming out and supporting. We need all the support we can get.
The place was rocking tonight.
Yeah, we appreciate that. The students, just, you know, so come support us. It's a new era, so yeah, we need all the support we can get.
Thank you. KJ, can you go through that last 6.5 seconds and what you saw out there and the feelings that you were going through as it was happening and then once the buzzer finally went?
I wasn't really, like, I was looking at the score like, wow, this is really about to happen. But, you know, it's still 6 seconds. Anything could happen. We're only up by two. And they got, you know, good shooters on their team and one, you know, terrific scorer. So anything could happen the last 6 seconds. So I wasn't completely, you know, in you know, congratulating everything and, until the 6 seconds was over.
Guys, what was the locker room like?
Oh, man. Dancing.
Yeah.
Showering duly. He probably changed his outfit, but he soaked.
It's excitement, man.
Excitement. It's exciting to win. So we just got to keep winning. So we love to win. So just why not do it?
KJ, you got a couple road games coming up now. How do you guys begin to translate this kind of play and take it on the road and begin to start to do this thing on the road?
I think that's another big test for us is winning on the road. We just proved that we can beat, you know, some of the best teams in our conference. And so if we can just remain, you know, poised on the road and, you know, fight back when we get down or when we're up, know how to keep that lead on the road, that will be big for us.
You guys kind of went five out tonight on offense, especially in the second half. Is that something that Coach had talked to you about going into this game to negate their height and length on defense to try to just pound out on the perimeter?
Yeah. Spacing was key to this game because they switch everything and it's a confusing 2-3 matchup zone. So we just had to space the floor because they knew they were going to be aggressive, and we just had to. We had great 3-point play tonight.
Thanks, guys.
Next up to the mic, if you will, for the post game press conference, Pirates' big victory over Cincinnati is Cincinnati's own coach Mick Cronin, and he was very outspoken on his thoughts on the loss. And let's go to him. Let's go to the podium right now.
Well, I thought the team that deserved to win won today. Their team had humility. And we played with a lot of arrogance. We were too good to scrap and fight. When we did scrap and fight, it was too little too late. And we got what we deserved. That being said, I'm happy for Joe. I thought his kids really played well. He's a good friend. So, give them all the credit.
The way your team started, the 9-0 run to the game, are you surprised what kind of happened?
Nah. Nah, that's just the beginning. You know, I have a team of guys that they've seen winning, but there's a difference between being on a team that wins and being the reason your team wins. So defensively, we were as bad as I don't even remember. 13 years ago, I coached a bunch of overmatched kids in the greatest conference to ever play basketball. We were overmatched every game, but we'd lose by 10, and I felt like we won by 20 because the kids gave me everything they had. So our adherence to the defensive game plan was as bad as it's been since I've been the coach.
The 3-for-19 from the three-point, is that just – missing shots, or were they doing anything defensively to make you take shots you didn't want to take?
Like I said, I give Joe's team a lot of credit. Truth is, both teams, you know, when you look at shooting, we, you know, I don't look at that as why we lost. You know, I give Joe's team credit for everything they did. We missed plenty of open looks, but we lost the game because of our arrogance. When you're arrogant, you don't listen to the game plan, and you don't follow the defensive scouting report. Our defense was terrible. Terrible. We also had 15 turnovers. So, you know, winning on the road, it requires toughness. You're going to get a team's best shot. I told our guys, everybody in this conference is looking for some payback on this group of guys. I know I would be. They found out today. They saw how excited Joe's team was to play against us. So hopefully we'll learn from it because it's not going to get any easier.
From practice, did you see?
Nah, we had one practice. Nah, as a coach, you can do a lot of talking. You know, at the end of the day, Scott, you got to get your team to play with defense. You got to get your team to play with discipline. And our defensive discipline was as bad as it's been since I've been the coach. Period. Now, if I could elaborate on that, you know, guarding, letting shooters shoot, not doubling guys we're supposed to be doubling, things that we do every day, things that are the backbone, the reason that we have been so successful at Cincinnati. And if we can't do it, we will not be successful anymore. Talent's only a small part of why you win.
Gardner was scoreless for quite a while, and then in the second half, he finally got one, so more of the same.
Well, you foul guys. It's hard to guard a guy standing at the foul line.
Did you see the spacing from ECU coming as far as like how they're going to try to space you out on offense?
They didn't do anything. You know, Joe does a great job. Like I said, he's a good friend. I'm happy for him. But I'm telling you, we didn't get the job done defensively. We played with absolutely zero discipline. It was almost like we didn't even have a scouting report. So that's why we've won games at Cincinnati. That's why they win games every year at Michigan State. That's why they win games every year at Gonzaga. And if we don't learn how to play some defense and get our mind on what we need to get our mind on, we got a whole bunch of teams that are looking to send us home with losses. And I don't blame them after the last couple of years. So our guys got to grow up. I got to do a better job. I got to find some guys that will follow the defensive scouting report. That's my job. Right now I didn't get it done today because it was bad. Thanks, guys.
Obviously, again, a big win for the Pirates. I cannot say that enough because I know Joe Dooley was happy to get this win, probably even shocking to him. He wouldn't tell that, obviously, to the media or to the public or to the fans. But I think that a huge win, team win for the Pirates. Pirates victorious again, 73-71 on Saturday afternoon at Williams Arena at Menjis Coliseum. Again, Pirates go to 8-6 on the year. Let's go now to Coach Dooley at the press conference, and let's go to him right now.
Statement, and we'll take questions.
I think it was a really good team win, and I think the big thing was the guys believed that they could win, and when things weren't going necessarily right, we didn't cave in, and there was a couple times we were on the ropes, and the guys sort of dug their heels in, and proud of them. It was a good win.
What's the thing that your team kind of conveyed to them to give them some belief tonight, and they all of a sudden they're hitting shots and they're playing like they can play again?
Well, hitting shots open. I mean, that's when you shoot 51%, it makes up for a multitude of sins. And we made some threes, even though we didn't get off to a great start. But the big thing was not turning the ball over. I mean, I think they probably got 4 or 6 points off of live ball turnovers. Now we turned it over 12 times, but not a lot of them were ones where they could run out and get easy baskets, which was a big emphasis.
How important was KJ's play early on?
He was great. I mean, we were struggling. He made some shots and, a big pull-up, made some plays, was aggressive driving the ball to the basket. I think what was underappreciated, to tell you the truth, was his defense. He did a great job. When Isaac picked up his third foul in the second half and he guarded Cumberland for a number of minutes, and, you're not going to stop him. He still got 18 points, but he limited his touches and limited – some opportunities for him to score.
What kind of message does this win for your team send to the rest of the conference?
I don't know. We've got to develop a belief in our program. Our guys have to develop a belief that we can win. I mean, the crowd was great. I think that helps, with energy and enthusiasm. And, we talk to our guys, let's try to get better every day. And we're young. These younger guys are starting to see some things for the second, third, fourth, fifth time. So the reps are starting to allow them to slow down a little bit.
Justin said the block at the end had a reverse layup and a free throw.
Great pass by Seth, and he gave us big minutes. And we needed guys to step up. I thought Tyler Foster gave us some good minutes. I thought our guard play, those guys gave us good minutes, and hopefully some of these younger guys will continue to get better in practice too.
What did Jaden learn from playing against a team like that, having such a tough first half and still being able to bounce back and really making a difference in the second?
Well, I think you can say it, and we talk about it with our guys all the time. You can't simulate SMU or Cincinnati's length and height in practice. So when you're saying to them, throw the ball a little bit higher on a shot, or you got to get the ball off a little bit quick, until they see the speed and athleticism, it sort of jolts you a little bit. And I do think he's crafty enough to figure some of these things out, and the second half, he had a couple of huge plays and free throws, and I thought Seth had a couple of huge plays for us also.
Notice you're not in your suit. What transpired?
They threw some water on me, but they weren't smart enough to realize I had water in my hand and got half of them, too. So that's they need to work on their game there, too.
The difference at 3.1, not only with y'all, but they finished 3 of 19. How much of that just...
That's a huge... I mean, we haven't shot the ball. I mean, Sean's going to make shots. We need KJ to make shots. I do think we've shot it a little bit. We're a better shooting team than we've shot it. Now, they didn't shoot it like they have. One thing we are, I think we're in the top 15 or 20 in three-point field goal percentage defense, too. So we have guard. One thing we have guard is the three-point line pretty well.
How nerve-wracking were those last 6.5 seconds?
Well, we had a timeout. When we came out of the timeout, we came out and said, if you can't get it in, use the timeout. We didn't. And obviously, I thought Cumberland was going to shoot it when he caught it. He was meandering towards the corner. I just, waiting. I thought he was going to let loose a three. It was good team win. We picked up another loose ball and wrapped it up.
Coach, when you were down 9-0 and you called a timeout, what did you tell the team in the huddle?
I mean, ask them, what are we scared of? I mean, we're not aggressive, we're passive, we're not doing what we're capable of doing. Let's go ahead and now wake up and let's get going. And I thought they responded pretty well, and we didn't get off to a great start in the second half either.
Yeah, to piggyback off that, right after the 6-0 run at the beginning of the second half, you called a timeout. How was that timeout? What did you tell the guys at that point?
Well, I think the thing we didn't do at SMU is when they made a run, which you know they're going to make, we didn't handle it. Today we handled it. We sort of managed it. It also helps when you make some shots and score. I think those are things that make everything a lot easier. I mean, it's when we answered a score or a bad situation with a basket at SMU, we had, we're down 4 and we get a layup and we miss and it turns into a 6-0 run, you're down 10. Just like that, because you missed the end. We didn't, when we had an answer, we answered today.
I asked Jaden what message this one sent. He said it's the Joe Dooley era. What do you think he means by that?
We want to have a good program. And I think we've got to recruit guys to go along with him if I didn't think we could win, we wouldn't be here. And I think that the big thing is getting guys to believe that you can recruit and you can come in here. We've got some things we got to work on, but we also have an opportunity to play in a high-level league, and we got a guy to build around.
You take this to the road now, a couple of games, a top-heavy conference schedule, first half.
4 of our first 6 are on the road.
And they're against good teams.
Mm-hmm.
How do you begin to translate this kind of performance and begin at least get some of that on the road?
That's the next challenge. I mean, it's I think these guys – we've been on the road 4 times. We've got to figure out some things. And, I think the big thing is just a lot more reps and the familiarity of playing against them. You played Cincinnati. You see what it's really like. And now you go to Memphis, and they're a little bit different. And Central Florida is a little bit different. Now how do you translate it? It's not turning it over. It's being solid defensively. It's making open shots. It's not panicking when things go wrong. And those are all things that factor in.
Coach, this is the second game in a row. The students go home and kind of pack probably down on the court with the $5 tickets. How did that plan come together, and how was that decision made? Was that you and Gilbert working together?
Well, I think John has got some ideas. I think marketing has some ideas. I mean, we were, I think it's the more people we have in there and the more people we can create excitement for, and hopefully more people will come back.
Speaking of John, he kind of embraced you after that one. What did he say to you?
Well, I guess he's 1-0 as the AD now. So he's, he has the first game he's at, so he'll take all the credit. And
anybody else?
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
And we have a huge show today, obviously, with the big win over the Pirates, I should say, over the Bearcats. Usually it's that way around. And Cincinnati drops to 12-3 now, 1-1 in the conference. And the Pirates, 8-6 overall, 1-1 in the conference now in American. And they're just 2 wins, the magical number we were hoping to get over this year. Last year was 10 wins for the whole season. They're already at 8-6. So it looks like they have a good shot to beat at least last year's mark. And hopefully by a long shot, we'll have to wait and see. Huge show for us. We've got 2 big guests. We'll have Will Vandervoort, who is actually in Santa Clara for tonight's game against Alabama. We'll look at that preview, and we'll look up at that matchup in just a little bit. But first, from Joe Dooley the first time around, Rafael Edwards. And let's go to that interview. Bubba and I had a chance to sit down with him a couple days ago, and let's go to him right now.
Great to have another great Pirate basketball player from Joe Dooley, I guess, 1.0, and that's Rafael Edwards. And joining us now, Rafael, thank you, man. Appreciate you coming on.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me, man. It's a pleasure.
No doubt about it. Rafael, when I think about him, I think about a sharpshooter. I think about Clutch. He's one of those guys that when you thank God he played in the Pirate uniform for a couple years coming from junior college, I know, but it was great to have him be on our team instead of against us.
Absolutely. Raphael was a tremendous, very versatile big man after transferring in from Kilgore Junior College out in Texas. So he was undoubtedly someone who had a tremendous impact on our program in 96, 97, 97, 98, those second and third years of Joe Dooley's first tenure, as you referenced.
In fact, Raphael, I just saw Coach, and he's doing well, and the team's had a tough I don't know if you saw, had a tough loss on Wednesday night to SMU, but they're looking to bounce back against Cincinnati.
Oh, okay, yeah, no, I didn't see that, but yeah, you know, he's back. I like Joe Dooley 1.0. That's cool. He's back. I'm sure they pick up. You guys would be able to pick up with the recruiting and all of that. You know, you'd be all right.
Yeah, that's the one thing that's tough right now is a lot of teams. A lot of the kids are not there anymore. It's kind of like a completely different team, right, Bub? A lot of the upperclassmen are not there, and so it's a situation where I hate to use the term bad apples, but, you know, some people that don't want to be there, don't want to be Pirates, or they're putting themselves, I guess the best term is to put themselves before the team. And, Raphael, you know, it's a team sport. You just can't have that.
Yeah, it's definitely a team sport, the ultimate team sport, in my opinion.
No doubt. Talk about how did Coach Dooley find you and bring you? I know your accent. I believe you were originally from Brooklyn, right?
Yep, I'm from Brooklyn. And, well, I met Coach Dooley. Coach Payne was recruiting me initially.
Right.
With Lou Hill, and they came to visit me at home, and, you know, we spoke. And I always had, you know, thought that maybe, you know, I gave ECU a possibility, but then Coach left and went to Oregon State, I believe it was.
Right.
And I just wasn't trying to go out west. So I was setting my sights elsewhere. But then when Coach Dooley got the job, he took another visit to meet me. And I was like, listen, I still want you to come here. You know, we're excited about having you, XYZ. So then that's how he and I met, and I made the decision to come to East Carolina.
And as far as your playing days, I know we've talked the likes of Tony Parham and Othello Meadows and those guys. People don't remember, but you guys played in a really tough league in the CAA. It was very underrated, in my opinion, with all the guards.
Man, super, super tough, man. Just the preparation and going in, how teams defended you, how you had to defend them. Our league from top to bottom was A1. Yeah, it was, looking at basketball now, and as much as I know about the sport now, it definitely was underrated.
Bubba, did you have a question for Raphael?
Definitely. Raphael, and you and I actually spoke about this a few weeks ago when we were initially talking and looking to set up an interview, but and we're certainly going to focus more on the positive memories more so than the negative ones. But we were talking about that 55-54 loss to Georgia in your senior season. That's one that I can still see that play happening as though it was yesterday. And it's hard to believe this, I guess, what, 21 years ago or whatever now. But for the Pirate fans that aren't familiar with that game, it was tied 54-54. Georgia had the ball the length of the court. They threw a baseball pass. And then there's just a total phantom foul call on the left wing. I don't think you breathed on the guy, much less touched him. But give us your memory of that play.
Oh man, that play, that game. Well, that whole game, that whole leading up to that game was very important to me because of who we was playing and my matchups and who I had to guard and who would be guarding me. But man, like I just remember looking at the clock, and I always say, you know, with basketball, with sports, it's never over until it's no time on the clock. And I can remember, you know, just having a good game, and everyone was playing well, and I was like, yo, we really got this. We're about to beat Georgia, you know? And I kept looking at the clock, and I was like, yo, it's almost done. It's almost done. And they threw that pass, and I said, listen, I just have to put my hands up just to make him shoot over me. And when the ref called a foul, I literally couldn't believe it. Not only was it a terrible call, you make that call on our home court. Like, you basically decided the game for us. Like, I was so upset. It took me about 2 weeks to get over that loss, man. I was so upset about that loss. And, you know, I like talking trash. So I couldn't talk trash after we lost. So that was something else I was upset about. But, you know, you win some, you lose some, right?
No doubt. And Rafael, as I think you're aware, we've had Othello Meadows, Tony Parham, Neil Punt, some of your former teammates on. And those guys, I wanted to give you a chance to defend yourself, so to speak. And they got a couple of verbal jabs in saying that you were the black hole, because they knew when they passed it into you that they weren't going to get it back. So what's your response to that?
Hey, like I was telling you, they just didn't read their job description properly, because I was doing what I was supposed to do. I was doing what I was brought there to do, and they were doing what they were brought there to do. So, you know, they should have read the fine print first.
Hey,
and like you just said,
you did it very well, because when I was preparing for this interview, obviously I knew the caliber of player you were and how you were an all-conference performer both seasons. But not only were you that's what you led the team in field goals made both years. And in fact, your junior year, you led the team in field goal percentage. I think you were 53-54%, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah, so, you know, little things like that. Like, I didn't realize that. But, you know, that's something you should have told them, Bubba. You should have threw those numbers out to them. And let's hear what they had to say, you know, while they're living in their fantasy world.
And the thing about it, a lot of times you see a big man have that type of field goal percentage, but you were someone who would step away from the basket and shoot a lot of 15-footers and maybe your occasional three-pointers. So that 54% is more impressive for yourself than it would be for a lot of big men.
Thank you, man. I'm just happy to be appreciated by somebody, man.
Because
obviously my friends and my old teammates don't appreciate me. And I actually still see Othello now. Like, when he comes to New York, he and I go to dinner. We go work out together. So next time I see him, I'm definitely going to, when we're boxing or whatever, I'm definitely going to give him a couple extra hard body shots.
Oh, my goodness. So I have a celebrity death match, right? Rafael, I wanted to ask you, as far as Coach Dooley, what kind of coach was he to play for?
Well, a few things I would say about not only Coach Dooley, but our coaching staff. We had the youngest coaching staff in the country at the time when I was there. So, you know, yeah, they made mistakes. You know, they were basically learning everything as we were. But Coach Dooley ran a very tight ship when I was there. And although sometimes we butted heads, I think I needed that, and it also helped me mature more so to be the man I am today, because we were able to butt heads but then still carry on and still move forward and still head towards the goal that we all had. And our coaching staff, one thing I will say is because of them, I'm able to dissect the game a way that, you know, when I talk to other people, that people are amazed that I can't do it that way. And it's because of those guys, how we prepared for games, how we went over the other team's plays, how we prepared to stop them. Like, I'm able to watch a game. And it's funny because I was telling a buddy of mine, when I watch basketball, it's almost like I'm in the Matrix. Like, when Neo didn't see people, he just saw numbers and codes.
Right.
And my mind immediately goes to what play they're running. What position is this, like, the man on the team? How would you defend him? How would you guard him? And it's crazy. Like, I can't just sit down and watch a game and just enjoy it regularly without all of that just going through my mind as if I was still preparing for something or someone, you know? So I definitely would like to say, because I use that in my life today, in my work today, and if I never said thank you about anything in my time there, I would say thank you to Coach Lou Hill, Lane Odom, Rob Sykes, and definitely Mr. Joe Dooley. I would definitely like to say thank you for that.
And Raphael, piggybacking or kind of building upon what you were saying about that coaching staff, you're probably not aware of this. I may have brought it up to you when we spoke a few weeks ago, and that's the fact that Lou Hill's the head coach at UTRGV, and UTRGV came to Minji's this year.
Nice. That's nice. That's how it's supposed to be, you know, when them guys end up getting their own their own teams. They do scrimmages or preseason games against each other, help each other out. So that's really cool. I'm happy for Coach Hill.
And Lane Odom's done pretty well too, right?
You know, where's Lane? Is he still coaching?
Yeah, I thought he was. Isn't he coaching, Bubba?
Actually, he had moved on several years ago. You know, I know he spent some time at Missouri under Quinn Snyder, but I think you may be mixing him up with Ryan Odom at UMBC.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I meant to say. Yeah, my bad. I'll have to edit that out. All right. My bad. Go to the recording.
But, Raphael, in addition to that Georgia game, what are some games that stand out? Do you have any that stand out that are where the Pirates ended up on the winning side of things?
My first game as a Pirate, I remember, you know, I took a long road to get there, and I remember I got to the team, and I was like 255. I looked like everyone, when I got on campus, everyone thought I was there to play football. And I remember the football coach always used to tell me, he was like, listen, man, I'll send you to the NFL before Joe sends you to the NBA. I remember that first game because I had to work so hard to drop the weight, to get my timing back. And, you know, all the guys, Othello, Tony, they were just me to me. You know, Dink played against me in junior college. We were in the same junior college conference, so he knew what type of player I was. But everyone else, Mo Grooms, everyone else was like, yo, where did you guys get this kid from? So I was battling that. I was battling trying to drop the weight. I was battling, getting my timing back. And I remember it all, you know, in my head. I said, yo, I'm going to be all right. I'm going to be all right. Just keep working hard. Keep pushing forward. And that first game we played against, was it Fairleigh Dickinson, maybe?
Yeah, it seems like it's either Fairleigh Dickinson, maybe you've been Fairfield.
Fairfield. And I think I had like 27 and 14 rebounds. Like, that was like the first time that I actually felt like me again from like my junior college days, and I did it on a Division I stage, and it was that game. I felt like it was just amazing for me. I had a bunch of family drive out to Connecticut to come see. You know, my first Division I game. Everybody dreams about playing Division I basketball. You know, so that game really stands out to me. And UNC Wilmington, one of the last games at home, because their defense was just bad. And Keith Spencer was just such a tough defender on me, and they were just tough, and they foul you, and they grab you, and they always connected on defense. And I remember we really needed that game, and I think I did, like, I ran off, like, 13 or 14 points in a row in the second half, all by doing less.
if I'm not mistaken, it seems like I was at that ball game, and sitting in the lower bowl, and I think you maybe knocked down some free throws in the final seconds to put it away.
Yeah. So those are two games definitely that I definitely remember. You know, obviously that Georgia game haunts me. Yeah, man. I really wanted that game bad. But those two that we came on the winning end were two really good ones that I do remember.
Raphael, I wanted to ask you about one of my favorite things about the CAA was the geography part of it, where you bus rides, not plane rides, like I talked to the other guys as well. But I wanted to ask you, one thing I wanted to ask the other guys, and I failed to mention, but I want to ask you, what was it like playing at the Richmond Coliseum? I was a huge fan of, even though it was not the pristine kind of place, it was something special about that place and where everybody kind of met and you had a chance to play in the tournament.
Richmond was cool. It gave us the feeling of big time, you know, like it was so big where the crowd was versus the court. and everything like that. And I like playing there, but me personally, I like it more when it's when like you're in the when you're in the pit of fire and like everyone is right on you. Like at UNC Wilmington, how
yeah.
the crowd is right there on you, or JMU, like you know, you really could feel the energy. Whereas most people where most people don't like playing on the road, especially in this day and age, I loved it. You know, I loved it. I loved the booing. I love because it's all still energy. You know, it's all still excitement. So it was all good to me. So while Richmond was good, I could think of some other places we played that I felt the energy more.
You know, Raphael, that reminds me of there's some people that like to be champion and some people like to be challenged. It sounds like you're a guy that likes to be the challenge.
Yeah, the challenge is that's where it's at, man. That's where you see you separate the men from boys in anything you're doing, not just sports. In anything you're doing, when you face your challenges and you face them head on, that's where it's at. Sometimes you're going to win, sometimes you're going to lose, but, you know, you see what type of man you are. You see what type of person you are when you're faced with adversity.
Now, Raphael, you concluded your ECU career in the spring of 98. Talk a little bit about your playing career after ECU. I researched it, and you played in the ABA, if I'm not mistaken, and maybe some other leagues. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, 98. Wow, that seems like a lifetime ago, man. Yeah, so when I left East Carolina, ended up going overseas. I played all over. I played in Portugal, France, Dubai, Finland, Argentina, Venezuela, Hong Kong. I did, when I was rounding off my career, I played in ABA. I played in the USBL for a few years. Yeah, man, it's been a hell of a ride. It's, you know, been a hell of a ride.
Well, I know if it's anything like broadcasting, Raphael, I know that you're still a part of the game. Can you talk about what you're doing now?
Yeah, well, when I stopped playing basketball, I knew I wasn't going to be able to do that forever. I was a Nike athlete for the time being. So after East Carolina, I played professional basketball for 9 years. And I was lucky enough to be a Nike athlete where I was in a ton of commercials, a ton of print ads, and I was what they call now an influencer. You know, that was before all the social media stuff. So I would get tons of product from Nike and everything, and to just wear, to go play, so I could be seen throughout the city wearing like things that probably weren't coming out for like months. And I tried out for the Knicks the lockout year, and Allen Houston and I became pretty good friends. And I remember it was a few years later, he saw me and he was like, "Yo, Rod, you still playing?" I was like, "No, I'm done playing now." He's like, "Well, how are you always in shape? Like, what do you do? You know, I'm trying to come back." This is when he was thinking about making a comeback to the NBA. And I was like, "Yo, you know what? You should come to Brooklyn and let me train you." And he was like, "Really? Like, what type of stuff will we do?" And I'd be like, "Yo," I told him a lot of low impact stuff, a lot of explosive, a lot of, you know, agility things to get you back on track, and then we could work on that handle and everything else. So he was like, "You know what? Let's do it." So he started driving from Connecticut to shoot down to Brooklyn to train with me. And that was the first person I had trained. And it went from training him to Elton Brand to Al Harrington to Jerry Stackhouse.
Well,
wow. You know, in between the pro guys, I have a ton of people that I train and I help with weight loss. A ton of people that I train to teach them how to box or to fight MMA. Yeah, so a lot of guys, you know, for MMA. And then now my most recent professional client is Brandon Ingram. He plays for the Los Angeles Lakers.
Right, certainly someone who's no stranger to Eastern North Carolinians and just basketball fans in general, because, of course, he came out of Kinston like so many great basketball players have, Jerry Stackhouse, et cetera, and then went on to a solid season at Duke and obviously with the L.A. Lakers now. And talk a little bit about his development. You said he had, of course, that rookie season where he averaged 9.5.
Yeah, he had his rookie season. You know, I didn't spend a lot of time with him when he was about to go into the NBA. You know, I met him because, like I said, I was training Jerry Stackhouse, and he had an AAU team. So he asked me to come down and train his AAU team before the Vegas stretch. So then I had that first stretch with him. That's when I met Brandon, when he was about to be a senior. And I remember talking to a buddy of mine that's heavy into basketball, that trains a bunch of kids. And he was telling me about the kid Brandon. He was like, oh, he's okay. You know, he's all right. He's probably top 100, top 50. And when I met him and watched how he played, watched how he moved without the ball, watched how he played with the ball, I told my buddy, I said, you're crazy. I said, it's no way in the world that there's five kids his class that's better than him. And I don't watch high school basketball like that. I said, it's no way. So that's when I met B. And then he did like a little stretch in the pre-draft stuff he was doing before he got drafted. And Jerry was adamant that I had a few days with him, you know, with his agents and stuff. So we got it, I think, like 3 days, you know, which we can't really do much in 3 days, but, you know, it was fine. And then after almost when his rookie season was done, I remember Stack and I was having a discussion, and I was like, man, yeah, you need to let me train this kid, man. Like, he's good, but he doesn't understand what he can be doing. Mm-hmm. You need to let me not only train him physically, like the strength, conditioning, explosion, I said, but mentally and skill-wise, just to get his mind right, like to get his mind focused on being a killer. So Stack completely agreed with me, and then I started in with him. As soon as that first year was done, I started in with him, and I was with him every single day until Lakers training camp opened. And, you know, I remember when we started working out and training, you know, some of the things I do is a little unorthodox, and I don't look like the typical basketball guru as everyone has, you know, on their Instagram and social media, and I'm not doing all these crazy drills, dribbling 12 basketballs while balancing a cone on your head. So I know some of the things I was telling B.I. initially, he was, you know, he was tentative if he was going to listen. He was like, yo, does this dude really know what he's talking about? But as that summer progressed and he saw himself doing things that he couldn't do the first day, things that I asked him to do that he looked at me and said, Ra, I've never done that before on the court. And I couldn't believe it. And I remember one time we were in the Lakers facility, and literally I told him, crossover, right to left, one dribble, lean in on the vert, and I want you to finish at the rim. And he looked at me and laughed and was like, what? So I did a small, you know, example of what I wanted him to do because I can't finish at the rim anymore. And then he looked at me and laughed. He's like, all right. And when he went to do it, his coordination, he couldn't do it.
Wow.
And I thought he was joking. I looked at him and I was like, yo, stop playing. Like, do it. And he was like, yo, I've never done that before. And I couldn't believe it. And I was like, what? And I said, you know, and I didn't want to ride him too hard because he had his little entourage with him too, you know. So he was like, I can't do it. And I remember telling him, I said, yo, at the time he was 19 or 20. I said, yo, you are 19. You're extremely intelligent. You're healthy. There is nothing on this basketball court that you cannot do. And that's not being cliche. That is how I feel about Brandon. Because if I felt like, yo, listen, no, you cannot do certain things, then that's different. That is exactly how I feel about B. There is nothing that he cannot do. But he has to be there mentally first. So we spoke about the move, did little things, and I remember, no lie, like probably a week later, 2 weeks later, we were about to work out. He was loose. He came down, crossed over, went to the left hand, leaned in, banged it, looked at me and just started laughing. I was like, wow. Yeah, like the kid is special. Things that I would go over with him or teach him or talk about, he literally had a unique talent of taking it Monday and us breaking down the game plan of, let's say, how Golden State was going to guard him and what's going to be open and what he needs to look at. You know, like I told you guys about earlier, that matrix gene that the coaching staff over there instilled in me. And from Monday, discussion and working on what's going to be open and doing XYZ, he would execute it Tuesday night in the game.
Wow.
And that was amazing to me. Like, he is executing it on the highest level, something that we went over the day before. And that, the kid is special. He once he understands who he is really and what he really can be, it's going to be super scary.
Right. After averaging 9.5 as a rookie, he put up 16 a game last year, and then last I checked, he was a little over 16 a game this season.
Yeah, I mean, he and I, you know, I would love to say, yeah, I did it. But it was definitely both of us and his connection and allowing me to teach him and him trusting me and everything that I told him to do. If I told him to run through a wall that was going to help him, he would do it. And we almost doubled all his stats, and that's unheard of in the NBA. You don't play 1 year and play like this. You know, his rookie year, you know, we live in an immediate world now that everyone wants everything right away. You don't play in the NBA and average 9 points a game and come back the next year and almost double all your stats across the board. You know, when he was a rookie, they were doing like, oh, if we did the draft again, conversations on ESPN. And I remember hearing them say, oh, if we did that draft again, there's no way we take Brandon Ingram number two. You know, they're just being super hard on the 19-year-old kid who still had Luol Deng starting over him. So it's not like he was even playing a ton to be able to show what he could do. So he went from his rookie year, people saying, yes, he's a bust. There's no way we will take him number two. To after that second year, people are like, yo, this kid is about to be an all-star.
Wow.
So in one summer of that work, we made that jump. And it's because of him, like his ability to adapt and to learn and to execute. So,
yeah, Rafael, I wanted to ask you about with the kids out there listening or the parents like myself. Bubba has a 7-year-old. I have a 5-year-old that are big into basketball. What can they do now at an early age to really – one of the things we're working really hard on, my son, he's good at shooting, but his dribbling skills is something we're working really hard on him right now.
The dribbling dribbling drill, something that I love doing with all levels of athletes. If you have a track – if you have a running track, outdoor track, indoor track, I teach them to move right in front of me, whatever the dribble drill is we're doing, and then I make them run the track, doing the same drill over and over, the one lap around the track with one hand, doing the drill. Then we'll do it with the next hand. Then we'll switch to other drills and other moves, because basketball is so much of repetition, and they have to get the reps in, you know, so properly, not just doing anything. Get the reps in properly, dribbling, hand on top of the ball, body language. You know, most people think when they're dribbling, it's all just them pounding the ball. No, it's body language, because you have defenders that guard you to look at your waist, they look at your chest, some look at the ball. You have to be all over the place. Head has to be moving. You know, like when you see the ball handlers, the real ball handlers in the NBA, they look like they're dancing. Their arms are flying everywhere. Their head is moving back and forth. Their shoulders are moving. You know, that's being into it. And that's what at a young age you teach them. And you let them, because they're going to look at you like you're crazy. If you're moving, your shoulders are moving, they're going to say, oh, I'm going to look silly doing that. But when you teach them how to copy and emulate it, and as their ball handling gets better, then they feel it and they know what they're doing after that. And then they make it their own. You know, everybody has their own dance step. Then they make it their own. But you have to have body language and everything into the ball handling.
Are you do you travel around training kids, or is it all up in your neck of the woods, so to speak?
all up here, what I do with B.I. is summertime train him, and then during the season is a different type of training. During the season is more of the to keep your body strong, make sure you stay on the court, and break down the plays, not only the Lakers' plays, but how people guard him and who's going to be guarding him next. Like, yo, this week you have such and such that's about to be guarding you. Yo, you know he's a tough defender. This is how you need to attack him. If it's not a pick-and-roll situation, if it's not a switch situation, and he is on you, this is what you need to do. This is the mindset you need to have. So during this season, it's all of that type of training. And then in the summertime, it's let's get better. Let's work on the jump shot. Let's work on your follow-through. Let's make sure the ball handling is this, this, and that. So, you know, it's different types of training. So I go back and forth.
That's Raphael. Sorry, Dave. I was just going to say earlier you referenced what an underrated league the CAA was back in the day. Obviously now ECU's in a tremendous league with the American Athletic Conference. It's recognized as one of the top 6 to 8 basketball leagues year in, year out. I think last year what we put maybe three or four teams in the big dance. And then who knows, with the caliber of programs in this league, it's very feasible that you could have 5 or 6 in certain years, with the likes of Memphis, UConn, Houston, et cetera. I didn't even mention Cincinnati. But tremendous exposure with this league, a lot of games on ESPN. Some guy that I want you to keep an eye on is he's not quite as tall as you are, but Jaden Gardner, a freshman big man for the Pirates. When the Pirates are on, check him out. He's averaging 19-9 thus far through the first 13 games of his ECU career.
Oh, those numbers are real right there. How tall is he?
He's 6'6", I think is what he's listed at. 6'6", 6'6", and a half, somewhere in there.
Oh, nice, yeah. Is he mostly down low? Is he like a swing man? Is he...
He's mostly down low. He's knocked down a few 15-footers, but for the most part, he's down low. Shortly after your time, you may remember the name that ECU had, Errol Bing.
Yes.
He kind of reminds you of him. He really hits the boards hard and gets a lot of put-back points and second-chance opportunities and that kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah, I'll check him out.
Very, very high motor, and he's out of the Raleigh area. He went to actually from Wake Forest, which is, of course, right outside of Raleigh.
Okay, cool.
Thank you, Rafi. Appreciate you, man, and hopefully you'll come back on with us. We've had a lot of fun with you, and you were so generous with your time. So thank you so much.
Man, thank you guys a lot for even having me do this, man. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, we'd love to have you back on sometime soon.
Yeah, shoot me the link as soon as you guys, you know.
Absolutely. As soon as we get this posted in the next few days, we'll definitely share that link with you.
Thank you very much, guys.
All right. Have a great weekend, man.
Take care.
You too, man. Happy New Year, guys.
Same to you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
New York tough. I think that Raphael could score a bunch of different ways. Kilgore Junior College, Lou Hill did a great job recruiting him. He could score a lot of different ways, and we could use a guy like with his versatility right now.
He's a lot like Jaden Gardner.
No doubt. Can we get another? I guess his eligibility is up, right?
Unfortunately, his eligibility is up.
Very excited about the national championship game, and Bubba, I know we've got a very special guest. Appreciate him. He's been very busy out there in Santa Clara, right?
Yeah, we do. Of course, everybody's anticipating the game on Monday night, and be the fourth time that Clemson and Alabama have met in the last 4 years. And now to break down the matchup, we're going to be joined by the Clemson insiders, Will Vandervoort. Will, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing, man? Appreciate you having me.
No, I appreciate you being here. I know in Santa Clara there's a lot going on. Can you tell us before we start talking about the matchup, what's it been like covering the game out there? The folks pretty cool?
Yeah, I mean, it's been – I guess becoming run of the mill for me. This is the third one in 4 years, the fourth college football playoff. But the area's been pretty good. The people are great. Seems like we just now getting back a little while ago from media day, Alabama and Clemson met with the media this morning and did the whole shebang as you guys probably saw on ESPN. And it was good. I had a lot of information, as you can imagine. when you cover these. So I'm sort of, my brain is in fry mode. So it's trying to figure out what stories you're gonna write and things of that nature, and but it's fun. It always is fun to do something like this, and so we're having a blast doing it, and seeing what's gonna happen on Monday night.
Just amazing to think about the program at Clemson, tremendous fans, tremendous fan base, and they deserve to have this kind of spotlight with the program itself. Can you imagine, is it hard to believe that Dabo, when he got the job 10 years ago, that you would be in the place you are now?
Yeah, it really is. Not that, we thought Dabo was going to do a bad job or anything. It's just a matter of, how good could this program be, and what level was he going to be able to take the program? And I think he's obviously exceeded expectations from where it has ever been. I mean, what happened in the 80s, what Danny Ford did was, great, and they had some great football teams, won a national championship themselves, won multiple ACC titles and a lot of 10-win seasons, but not to the level and the consistency of what's going on right now with the program. And, I think, Dabo, anybody knows him, knows that he's a guy that he believes he can do anything and accomplish anything. And, when he got the job 10 years ago, he said it. I was at that press conference. He said, look, we're going to win a national championship here, and I believe that. And they've already done that one time, and they got an opportunity to win the second one here in 3 years. So the man has kept his word, and he's done it in a way that's been different, unique to anybody else.
It's hard to believe it's been 10 years that he's been there. It seems like just yesterday to me. I remember, when Tommy Bowden stepped down and Dabo took over. I cannot believe it's been 10 years. But anyway, speaking of 10 years, do you think, or do you even care, to be honest, outside of Clemson and Alabama fans, it seems like there's a little bit of fatigue between seeing that matchup, like fans outside of obviously Clemson and Alabama fans are almost tired of seeing that game every year for the national championship, all seemingly. Now, obviously, Clemson and Alabama are in their way there, so, I guess you want to do something about it, beat them. But do you sense that from fans outside of, the Clemson and Alabama fan bases? Or, like I said, do you even care?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I don't really care personally. But, I do hear it from the other fan bases. But like you said, if you don't like it, you got to beat them. And, I think it's just more of a thing where a lot of the fan bases are jealous because it's not their program. It's not where their schools have been. And, and to see not only, I think a lot of it is because people look at these two programs and they see the future and what shape these two programs are currently in right now, and it doesn't seem like they're going anywhere anytime soon. And that, I think, is what probably has got fans more fatigued, that you could see Alabama 5, Alabama Clemson 5 next year, Alabama Clemson 6 the year after that. I mean, we could see these two teams playing numerous more times after this year for championships because of the way the programs are built.
What are your thoughts on playoff expansion?
I'm not really a fan of it. I'll tell you why. I think that it dilutes the game. Now, the regular season, it truly does mean something in college football. Lose one or two games, and that's your playoff right there. Ask Georgia. That was their playoff. They had an opportunity. If they don't lose to LSU, then Georgia's probably in the playoff this year. And there probably wouldn't have been much question about it. But they did lose to LSU, and then they lost to Alabama, which was their proverbial playoff game. And they didn't get the job done, had a 2-touchdown lead and lost it. And, they were eliminated. I think that's that way all throughout the season. If Clemson would have lost one game this year, they would have been eliminated. They wouldn't have made the playoff. We saw Ohio State didn't make the playoff after losing to Purdue. I think those are your playoff games. But if you start saying, well, let's get 8 teams in, then all of a sudden those games are not as important. And a team like Ohio State, who, in my opinion, didn't deserve to be in the playoff because of the way they lost to Purdue, could sneak into the playoff and I don't think would do well in the playoff. I think they would run into a Clemson or Alabama, and you would have saw the same results that you saw some of those other games we just saw. So I think it's kind of, I don't think you need to go down that path. I think leave it as it is. Just let's see what happens here for years to come. Right now it's still only in its fifth year, and, granted two teams have dominated it, but I don't think just because two teams have dominated it, you need to go and make a change. I think you need to play it out, see what happens, And that's, again, what makes college football so great is its regular season. And the thing about it, guys, this way. Everybody talks about the NCAA basketball tournament, and it's awesome, those 2 weeks. But the rest of the part of the year, nobody other outside of the state of North Carolina really cares, because regular season in college basketball doesn't mean as much.
Well, you also got two arguments there that I'll make against that. One, in basketball, there's so many games. So the regular season ain't going to mean as much just for the sheer amount of games. And two, if you do it with eight teams and you have, let's just for the hell of it, we say we expanded to eight. We had the five Power Five conference champions, two at-larges, and then one champion from the group of five. Then, in theory, the regular season would mean just as much, because the conference races would mean so much. You'd have to win your conference, except for the two at-larges, to make the playoffs. So, I mean, wouldn't that keep the regular season meaningful because of conference races?
No, not really, because I'll tell you why. So you're going to put the five Power Five conference champions in. So if Pittsburgh were to have beaten Clemson this year, you were going to put a 8-5 team in the playoff. They don't deserve to be in the playoff at 8-5. Then you're getting like the NFL playoffs, where it's just about winning your division and you get in, and you're not necessarily a team that's deserving of being a playoff caliber team. And you see that a lot in the playoffs, in the NFL playoffs, where a team will win their division, they get in the playoffs, and they get embarrassed by another one of those teams that are better. And I think that's what you would see with college football, and I don't think people want to see that. You don't want to see a diluted system. So I don't think that's definitely not the way to do it, to give automatic bids. I think earning it and showing it and doing the eye test are the best ways to do it, because then you're getting the better quality teams in, and not just a team that got in because they won their conference, like the ACC, which wasn't a good conference at all. Outside of Clemson, it was not a very good conference this year. And if Clemson would have lost, that's why I said, if Clemson would have lost, they wouldn't have got in, and they wouldn't deserve to get in. So I think that's the way you got to look at it. And I'm not a big fan of getting teams in just because they won their conference.
Well, we can clearly disagree there.
Will, you take a look at this matchup, and like we said earlier, and this is obviously the fourth time the programs have met, and then going back 3 years when they met in the national championship game, what a tremendous game that was. Alabama won 45-40. Then Clemson got the best of it in the next year, 35-31. Then last year, 24-6 down in the Sugar Bowl. So you had a couple that were more offensive games. And then last year, not nearly as many points, only 30 combined points. How do you see this year's game playing out? Because you have two defenses that are allowing, I think, 16 and 14 points respectively.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you broke up on me. Say that last part again.
Yeah, the two defenses right now are allowing 16 and 14 points roughly, respectively. And last year's game was more of a defensive struggle, just 30 points combined as opposed to 45-40 and 35-31 in the two championship matchups. So how do you see this year's game playing out?
Well, I think I think the defenses are better this year. I would say, I think Clemson's defense is a little better than last year's defense overall. I think Alabama's defense maybe is not as good as last year's, but they're still really, really good. I think this can be a game where the two defenses can take over. There's no doubt in my mind, because offenses have their moments where they're just electric and they make these big plays, but then they have these inconsistent moments, especially Clemson. Well, they'll go a whole quarter and not do anything on offense. So it's going to be interesting to see what these two defenses do in this game, and if they can take it over like they did a year ago. I think they can, and I really believe this could be a low-scoring kind of game because of the way I think the pressure of these two defensive fronts can get on the quarterbacks.
I agree. I think it's going to be more on the lower scoring end of things, and maybe not quite 30 points, but I should say a little bit more than that, but nowhere near the 66 and 85 that we saw before.
Yeah, exactly. I think they're going to have their moments where the offenses are going to make plays, but I just think these two defenses overall are very talented. And when you look at Clemson's defensive front, I think they can get pressure on Alabama, obviously. And I think Alabama can get some pressure on Clemson's offensive line and their quarterback. So I think it's going to be one of those things whichever quarterback is the most uncomfortable, the team that can make the most that quarterback uncomfortable is the one that's going to win this game.
Speaking of making plays, a guy, Ross from Clemson,
So he had had a decent year. I'm not saying that, but he had what was his biggest game on the biggest stage thus far. 6 receptions for 148 yards and 2 touchdowns, what, 1 of 42 and then 1 of 52 against Notre Dame. Talk a little bit about him.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, he is a freak of an athlete. Go back to the spring and the catch he made that Clemson put out there was just sick. And, you know, he has lived up to every expectation. I think he's a big-time player. He's a big target, fast, physical, 6'5", 215 pounds. Can really get after it. You know, I think when you look at this matchup, he's going to be one of the guys that could really be a difference maker for Clemson because as the same way Clemson hasn't seen their kind of guys at wide receiver, it works the other way with Justin Ross and Clemson. Alabama hasn't seen these kind of receivers that they're going to see. So it's going to be fun to watch and see what actually happens in these matchups.
Will, are you surprised at this point that Brett Venables hasn't gotten a head coaching job somewhere yet? Is he holding out for the right job?
He actually is holding out for the right job. We know that for a fact. He's told us that that he's just not going to take any job and be a head coach. He wants to take the job that's most beneficial to him. He enjoys it at Clemson. He told me a couple of years ago, why do I want to go somewhere when, first of all, he's making $2.2 million a year. He's making as much money as some head coaches. He doesn't have to worry about the head coaching duties. And he's got all these stud athletes, you know, to sit there and coach and have fun with.
Great interview. Thank you so much, Will. Appreciate you very much. And I know that he and I disagree vehemently on the playoff, but I did not cut him off. I promise. I just want to say for the record, people, I know that Kyle was just teasing me about that. I did not cut him off. Let me just say that I was at ARU in Greenville, full disclosure. I walk in the building and my cell phone gives out. So, and then when I went to my car trying to get it back, the signal never came back. It's the thing called life and dealing with cell phone coverage. So apologize to Will. We did that, my Bubba and I did. And we also apologize to you because we wanted a few more minutes with him. But I think you get a good idea about that. And talking about the playoff, you know, this playoff thing has got to go to expand to make it fair. It's a made-for-TV event. They have about 10 teams. Clemson's one of them, so I understand why Will wouldn't mind for it to change. Why would you want it to change when it's been working out greatly and nicely for your team? But for the majority of schools, it does not pay off, and it does not look good for the sport of college football, which you could make even more money by putting conference champions in there and at-large bids as well. The NFL has 12 teams. I think it go to at least 12 to 16 in that range to be more fair. And it's only 129 teams. So the percentages are not like you're giving every single school in America a chance to win the national championship. Like, not every school is in. So we'll have to wait and see that. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, you know, as far as the playoff go, David, I kind of agree with you. It needs to go to 8, at least 8. It'd be nice if it could go to 16, but you would take 8. Then you have your 5 so-called Power 5 conference champions, 1 champion, the highest-ranked champion, from the so-called Group of 5, which, of course, includes the American, and then 2 at-larges. That would give us 8 teams. And what it would have given us the last 2 years is UCF from the American in the playoff. It would have given them a chance at the national championship, particularly last year when they had McKenzie Milton. It would have been interesting to see what they could have done with a Clemson or an Alabama. It would create a lot of excitement. It would make conference races mean more. You know, at the Group of Five level, you know, you would have teams like UCF and hopefully East Carolina here in the future, and Boise State and Northern Illinois and San Diego State and so on, fighting for a playoff spot and a legit chance at the national championship. And over time, like UCF and Boise have been able to build, and hopefully again East Carolina in the future, if you're competing for a playoff spot, meaning you're competing for at the top of your conference every year, you can really start recruiting at a higher level, and it would help a lot of schools, you know, the so-called Group of Five level,
And it would just be better for college football in general to expand the playoff. Now, as far as this year's playoff goes, in the national championship game tonight, as we release this podcast on Monday, between Clemson and Alabama, I'm kind of, you know, not even really looking forward to the game. I have Alabama-Clemson fatigue, to be honest with you. It's the same thing over and over. But they are the two best teams in college football this year. And it'll be a good game Monday night. I think it'll be a low-scoring game, somewhat low-scoring. Clemson's really good, but I think Alabama is pretty elite when you look at the scores of their games this year, and if you've watched them play. I think it can be a close game. It wouldn't surprise me if Clemson wins it, but I'm gonna take Alabama for another national championship. Nick Saban does it again. I'm going to say, you know, pretty low scoring, something like Alabama 24, Clemson 21, 28, 24. I guess I'll go my official score, Alabama 28, Clemson 24 will be my official prediction for the national championship game. What do you think, Bubba?
I thought that was a tremendous interview. I really appreciate Will Vandervoort coming on from the Clemson Insider, someone who has just such a tremendous knowledge of all things Clemson, as he's covered the Tigers for years and years in all sports. He's someone, he's the senior editor and writer there, but he's also co-authored a book, Clemson, Where the Tigers Play. We wanted to plug that as he did not receive an opportunity to do so. Due to our technical difficulties a little bit earlier when we were recording with him. Now, moving on to the matchup, when you take a look at this game, it's so close. Just looking at the stats, Clemson's averaging 44, 45 points a game. Bama's averaging nearly 48 points a game. You have the Tigers, who are limiting opponents to, I think it's right around 14 points a game. Bama's only giving up a little over 16. So it's undoubtedly going to be a four-quarter game, in my opinion. And most people are expecting the Crimson Tide to win a close one. And I think they're currently a five-point favorite, if I'm not mistaken. But I'm going to go the other way. I like the Tigers to pull the mild upset. I think Dabo's club is going to get their second national title in three seasons. And that college football playoff national championship trophy is going to be headed back to Death Valley. My thoughts on college football playoff expansion are this. It's not a matter of if there's going to be expansion. It's just a matter of when. Because all it's going to take is going to be a team or two, a USC or an Ohio State, someone like that getting left out. And things are going to change, and I think they need to change. I think it needs to be an 18 playoff. I think you need to have your five champions in there, and yeah, you're going to have years where you may have a 2-3, even a 4-loss champion, but those years, they're going to be few and far between, and when you do have that, those teams that are undefeated or have one loss, or maybe at the most two losses that are the so-called more deserving teams, then they should take care of business and beat those teams, right? So I think that the 18 playoff is going to happen. And like I said, I think you're going to have those five Power 5 champions. You're going to have two at-larges. And then hopefully the group of five champion will get that seat at the table, whereas now it's just a bid to a New Year's Six Bowl.
Well, to kind of sum things up on this show, again, it was a great win for East Carolina over Cincinnati this past Saturday. It was great to get a huge upset like that and see the guys celebrating with Coach Julie in the locker room. We'll see what happens later this week against Memphis. I hope everybody enjoys the national championship game tonight, Monday night, whenever you're listening to this, between Clemson and Alabama. Should be a good one, even if you are tired of Clemson, Alabama over and over again. It still should be a great competitive ball game. David, what do you think?
Well, you know, Kyle, it was a huge win on Saturday. It might be one of those that where people look back and say that was the beginning of the Dooley era as far as the second time around. And I think that he has something to build on. We'll have to wait and see. You got two big road games at Memphis on Thursday, and then you have, obviously, UCF this weekend with Johnny Dawkins down in Orlando, two big teams in the league. So they definitely have to improve there. but certainly a great win. I forgot to give a prediction earlier. I like Clemson 27-24 over Alabama. The Alabama coaching staff and players are probably not overlooking Clemson, but I think some of the talking heads are already giving the trophy to Nick Saban and like the all-time winningest coach, especially at Alabama. It may happen tonight. I go with the Tigers, 27-24. Note about it. And, Bubba, do you want to actually do some promotions, talk about things we've got coming up, and obviously social media?
Yeah, sure, Dave. I'd be glad to. But before I talk about some of the tremendous content we have headed our listeners' way over these next several shows, I just want to say thank you to all of our listeners, whether they're from Pirate Nation or otherwise. Folks, you made the month of December a record-setting one on the Sports Objective podcast. We had more than 6,200 listens, and 2019 is off to an exceptional start as well. So just thank you from myself, Dave, and Kyle. We really appreciate you tuning in. Now, as far as some of the content we have headed your way, we're going to be talking to the 1983 football team, several players, and then also some support staff. We'll catch up with those folks to relive an awful lot of excellent memories from that special season, a season in which the Pirates finished ranked in the top 20 for the first time in program history. And we'll also have an AAF show, which is the new 8-team football league, the Alliance of American Football. We'll talk to some folks with ECU ties. And then last but certainly not least, follow us on our social media accounts. We're very active on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. On Twitter, you can follow us at TheSportsOBJ. On Instagram, it's at TheSportsObjective. And on Facebook, you can find us by simply searching The Sports Objective. Like and follow us there. We've actually had a huge increase in our follows and likes on Facebook over these first 6 days of 2019. We've gained more than 150 follows and likes over these last 6 days. And then also subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Well, all good things must come to an end, and this has been a fantastic episode. Thank you so much for everybody, for all the listeners, and appreciate you, as Bubba was saying. I'll piggyback off of that. Like us on social media, Facebook. A lot of people liking the Facebook page. Also, SoundCloud listeners, you can follow us. Love to have you there. We have, let's see, what else? You can listen anywhere that you can find that. We're everywhere, distribution-wise, on the podcast players all across the place. Wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, you can listen to us. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review, by the way. I want to mention that as well. 5 stars, write us a nice review. We have a lot of fans out there. Appreciate you very much. And if you want to get in touch with the show, you can simply send us an email, and that is TSO, the Sports OBJ, at gmail.com. I'll give it that correctly again. TheSportsOBJ@gmail.com. is a way to get up with us, and we'd love to have you. All right, for Bubba Rosenbaum and Kyle from LaGrange Barbara, I am Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.